briefly, what it talked about was that there's a, that men in the '50s and sixties, society basically told men what they wanted. And in the now in the '70s and the '80s, the women had basically defined what a man should be, and that men do not have the energy to really define for themselves what it is they want, what it is they are. And it was a call in this interview to reclaim some of the energy, maybe power, energy to decide to for ourselves what it is that we are. Here and then up here.
Well, it just seems to me that we probably wouldn't get much argument in this room about the fact that men and women have definitely been socialized to behave and want very different things in this culture. I mean, since infancy, we've all been socialized in men in one way and women in another. And so it doesn't seem unusual to me at all to come to a point in time where you try and separate that out from what it is that you really want. To answer your question, why is really in there? You know, I mean, what is it that men want apart from what they have been socialized to think they want? And it's hard to talk about feelings, I think, especially for men.
Ann Wilson Chafe, in a book called A Woman's Reality.
No louder, please.
Ann Wilson Chafe, in a book called Woman's Reality, states intimacy is defined by men and women differently. That intimacy for a man is basically turned in physical terms, in sleeping with, in having sexual intercourse with another person. Intimacy for women, if I have her statement right, is in close conversations, in spending time with that person, conversing with them and talking to them. And if that's, you know, we both men and women may want intimacy, but what we mean by that may be different, just according to her. That has resonated. Barry, you had something?
Yeah, I got several different points. A lot of these are a response to Terry, I guess. Number one, I guess I don't necessarily see it as a sexist question. I don't necessarily see defining what one wants as automatically against somebody else to start with. So I don't necessarily see to say that what I want is automatically in opposition to what women are, or some kind of sexist notion of that. Secondly, I think Shirley sort of already spoke a little bit to why the really might be in there. I guess there's a way in which I really don't think that men and women have wanted necessarily the same thing, and we seem to sort of be assuming automatically that we do, and I'm not so sure that's true. And I think Terry, you said sort of it sort of implies that maybe there's something in men's hearts and souls to be rooted out, and I guess maybe I think there is. There's a matter of sort of facing up to some of the place we are at this particular point. I guess one way for me to get at that, which has always been sort of a helpful model, comes out of Carol Gilligan's work. I don't know how many people are familiar with that. There's a book called In a Different Voice, and without going through that, basically it's on moral development, but without going into all of that, she basically talks about how for men, maturity is becoming more autonomous. In other words, for a man to be a stronger and more mature person, that means for you to become more autonomous and be strong on your own. And so moral decisions become one of principles of how you can stand apart from a situation and separate yourself from it and then be objective and impartial. Whereas for women, to be a mature person is, and to have worth and identity, and I should have said the same thing for a man, have identity is to be autonomous and to be your own person. For women to have identity and to become mature is to be in relationship. And so that moral decisions then become ones in which you enter the situation, and it becomes much more contextual. And that's a very simplified explanation of what she's doing. So I think that there's a way in which we have sort of seeing ourselves as wanting different things. And I think that if we don't confront some of those differences, maybe we'll end up wanting the same thing, but I'm not sure it's automatic that at this point in our consciousness, that's what we really are striving for. In the speech.
Can we focus or push, not so much in comparison, but to take a look at what some of us have mentioned now about what men want. Later we can decide if it's the same thing as women. I mean, that's a valid art, that's a valid thing. I'm curious, and with the shortness of time here, to try to understand what it is that men want, and it may definitely be the same, it may definitely be different. And what I've heard so far, power, respect, which means obedience, love, which means respect, physical intimacy, and autonomy, that's some that has come forth so far. Are any of those ones that make sense to you, want to add to that list, want to take away, want to shift it a little bit? Yeah, you had a question, and then over to you.
There, just something to say in response to that. I'll put something on the table, a possibility, something that occurred to me yesterday. And I'll use a sports metaphor, I guess, that one thing which I could see myself wanting as a man is some clear sense of a playing field, or some clearly marked playing field, and add to that some sense of the rules. I'll just leave it like that.
I could restate that one. Resonates. More serious than my first three, I had a sense, thinking this through, that the part of the resistance is that that to be a man, right, to shift the terms a little bit, but at least in our culture, to be a white male, is not to want something. Question, what does a man do makes sense, but to admit that you have wants is to push the limit there. I found that in Sammy's question last night, to shift the question to say, and it never went anywhere, for men to say, in what way do you recognize yourself as in bondage? Just like, wow, I want to say, hey, I ain't got no bondage. And then the second that comes around is to say, that's my bondage. Does that feedback on what you're saying?
I don't see the connection.
Well, I think in the sense of having, if you have the playing field and the rules, you don't have to want anything, you just play the game.
Uh-huh.
You do. You act.
I mean, I think the sense which I was seeing with the playing field was the sense of being able to be in a position where you can play yourself out.
Why out?
Wow, I mean, that's a sort of a word that I used to... And I think I understand what you're saying about there's an aspect that I am familiar with of not wanting to have wants, because having wants seems to me they can be denied. And perhaps that's a peculiarly or especially male position. It doesn't resonate immediately with the sense I was getting at in terms of being able to see the world as something I understand and I know my position in. I know what I can do and I know what I can't do, what's allowed and how to play.
Somebody said, I don't know if it's one of you who are here, that last night it felt like everybody were spectators.
As what?
Spectators. Mm-hmm. That both men and women were watching. They weren't playing. And I think, if I want to carry your playing field metaphor out a little bit there, that men only want to play once they know what the boundaries are, once they know the rules, once they know that they might be able to be good at it, once they know they won't be able to fall, once I know I won't fall on my face. And then I will get there and play, but I want to stand back and observe it for a while. and say, yeah, I think I can do that, versus I'm out there and I don't even know what the game is. You know, it's, I understand that.
I agree with you. I think men are more reluctant to be vulnerable. But in a lecture by Richard Rohr, he stated that in the society we live in, men are motivated by power, sex, and money. Those three items were the topmost.
Does that ring true to you?
Yes.
No,
yeah.
That
everything except the money.
Way in the back.
Well, I think because of the nature of that question, I think one of the most important educational institutions in life is marriage, and anybody that's been married more than 1 year is going to be careful about answering that question. What is man really
want? I've been overhearing some people here, and they're meaning, I overheard them when I was talking too, to speak up a little bit.
All right, well, I'm saying a married man learns to be prudent, especially if you've got a loaded question like this one. But the point I want to make is, you know, the classic statement, rather cynical, about a wife is by Bacon, was the wife a young man's mistress, a middle-aged man's companion, an old man's nurse. I'm not advocating that, but what the point I want to make is the question certainly is related to time and age and stages of life. And you have, and as is true for a woman, it is for a man. And in the last session, Joanne Hult, you know, has what all men and women really want, is a full life and a life of abundance. And so we have all kinds of wants. They change. And just to get personal here, so it's not just a spectator or making a cynical quotation from Bacon. And I won't tell you what stage I'm in.
That's getting personal, huh? I'm not going to tell you.
But in regard to our marriage, we have a slogan for, you know, you have to go a year at a time. And my wife got pregnant the first year we were married, and we've never lived, even though I'm 56 and she's 54, we've never lived as a couple without children. And we have now a younger child, 16, and she'll be a college freshman in 1 year, and our slogan is, one more year.
A hand over here.
Isn't there also a question of a generational gap when you ask the question what men really want? Do men my age want the same thing as men who are in their 20s today?
A good way of finding out is to rephrase the question, what do I really want? What do I really want? And if you can start asking that or sharing some of those answers, then we can see how different or similar we may be.
Well, let me ask a question in response to your question. Do you think that there is a sizable difference today in what men really want, given the sexual revolution that's taken place in the last generation, the role reversals that have occurred, and what women really want, and does it affect women more in moving into this sphere of greater responsibility, greater equality? Does it affect them more than it does men in giving up some of the power that they have experienced up until fairly recently?
I know it's affecting me. I can speak for myself. And if somebody else wants to affect, I think there is the rapid changing pace of things makes things all the more confusing. And all the more confusing, it's so much easier for us just to exist versus to live. And I think to live versus existing is to claim an identity, or to know it an identity, or to sort through it versus just kind of being a ball and a pinball machine bouncing all over the place.
Look, I'd just like to say that as one whose wife moved to Chicago January 1 and who's had a commuting marriage for the last 8 years, it is simply one of the most exciting times of our life. And I think...
And you live in St. Paul.
And I live in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Is that what does it?
What does it do? Does it? Are children involved?
Sure, there are children involved.
On both sides? I mean, some live with you, some live with her? Or?
No, they're out of the house.
Oh, that makes a difference, I think.
That makes it easy.
It is. It's very, very interesting time of our lives.
Well, I think it's an interesting time of life for us, too, because we're older and bereft of some of the responsibilities we used to have. But with you, I'm wondering if the excitement of it is the fact that you both have, obviously your wife must have a career, you find something to discuss that's new and different. I think that is needed at this stage of life. In our instance, we have a new house and some new things like that, too.
Yeah, but we've changed. I mean, you read the financial page and I read the recipe.
Yeah.
Well, this is better than last night.
Barry?
What I was going to say doesn't directly connect with that, so I don't know if anybody else wants to say something first. I don't want to lose that. Otherwise, I will.
Anybody want to pick up on recipes and financial pages, or living away from
his
spouse?
Anybody want some of his recipes?
Are they any good?
Oh.
Well, I think you can go, Barry.
Yeah. You talk about differences in generations, and I think, and whether that's the women's movement has affected. I guess part of what I was trying to say last night was, and maybe this is sort of a clever way of putting the question, I think one of the problems and some of the bondage for me is to, on one hand, want the power and the autonomy. I like being in control. I like being autonomous. I like being independent. So on one hand, maybe one way of saying is that's what I want. But what I have learned, primarily from women, is that in some ways what I really want is more mutuality, more sense of a real love, of being able to be more vulnerable. And the problem is being caught in both of those places. That is the bondage, and that is the difference between what I want and what I really want.
Does that ring true with any of the rest of you males?
How about the young man last night that said that he had been there, had the power, had achieved what he wanted to, in response to the young man who said that he had finally become stronger? And then he said, and now I'm a wimp and I want to stay a wimp.
He just walked out.
Oh, no! I didn't hear that. I didn't hear him say he's a wimp and he wanted to stay one. But that
he recognized
in himself a brokenness and a part of himself that was inadequate. And what I heard him to say was that as he came to accept, embrace that broken part of him, that was what he wanted, was not to stay inadequate and, I mean, not to stay what he called a wimp, but to embrace the broken parts of himself.
They really
well, I
were.
Don't think he regarded his wimpishness as broken.
No.
He liked being
a wimp.
He was very comfortable without having to be
I couldn't hear it that way.
No, I would say Rich Anderson is not comfortable
being competitive
and not in me. He's not comfortable being a wimp. And what he was trying to say is that he wants to be able to get to a point in his life where he can accept those parts of himself that are like that.
You don't think he accepted it? It sounded as though
no,
he accepted
I don't think
part.
He does. I think he's really working on it.
If any of this relates to one of our experiences that's in this room, let's pick up on that. Otherwise, I think we should. That's kind of too anti. Somebody who just walked out is not good.
I didn't know.
I started to answer it on the basis that I had just come in and what we heard him say is not necessarily what he meant, sort of thing. I believe that he was saying, we have a variety of attributes. We have some of strength, some of weakness. Some might consider at some times to be a wimp or, you know, macho or whatever. The ability to become comfortable with oneself and the diversity of oneself, I believe, is what that was leading to, or what that was bringing across. Not that one is at all time any one of those categorizations.
We all dream to be Superman someday in some sort of way. And when do we learn to live as Clark Kent and be happy with that? And as that makes us stronger, more powerful, with, you know, et cetera.
But just to react to that, that's kind of a stereotype, but I...
Definitely.
I guess, I think some, we'll talk about men, so I'll stick with men, but I agree men want to be important. I think some men have a very easy feeling important. And others have a bad self-image problem, and they never feel important. And they want to feel important, but they're crippled. They never feel important because they don't think they're good enough for work. But so, I guess there's a great diversity, I think, among men as far as what they really want to be or what they really want. Some that I believe have no... wanting to feel important is just isn't on their list.
How important is it for you to feel important or to feel something else? What's important for in your life?
That's a heavy question. Let me think on that.
I think we're all afraid of being vulnerable. And there are weak points that we don't want to look at. We don't want to face them. Personally, those things, as I come face to face with them and overcome them, I think I become more of the person that I want to be. But it's very, very difficult. And I think I'm going to do it the rest of my life to try to whip those things. And I think that's probably where Rich was coming from, too. But I found that with the help of my wife, that I can do that more, because I can be open and vulnerable to her. If you can find somebody you can be vulnerable with, I think you can really lick that thing. And I think the society, as I say, society has taught the man that he's motivated by only power, sex, and money. We grow into that. I want to grow away from all of that. I don't like the image that society puts on a man today. I want the feminine part of me to come out. And I think that's where the answer is. That most men are afraid to look at the feminine side of themselves. And we are born male and female.
I guess I've never had a problem or even no desire to want to feel vulnerable. And so it's not something related, but there's one question that my father used to ask me that I relate to and still do. I have a very close relationship with my father, and he was a pastor. But every time I did something dumb or stupid or just as a general observation, he would say in a very friendly way, "Leonard, do you ever think you'll amount to anything?" I still have hope.
Did you say that you don't have any problems being vulnerable, or vulnerability isn't an issue?
I don't
for
think
you?
That's a key to marriage. Being personal here, my wife came from a broken home, and that was always a concern for her. She didn't want to be hurt. But each year of our marriage, you know, that's gone away more and more, and marriage is a thing of trust. And we're not really vulnerable. I don't feel that either one of us are really concerned about feeling vulnerable or being hurt. That's something you worried about, to me, when you don't have a really strong relationship.
I'd like to agree with a friend here in the front row. I think vulnerability is absolutely crucial in terms of relationship with others. I think that it's true that men have had great difficulty, I agree with you, they've had great difficulty making themselves vulnerable or showing themselves to be vulnerable in front of others. Because one of the things that women in the feminist movement have taught many of us, at least have taught me, and I think that's all to the advantage of who we are as human beings. So I guess I would like to reinforce the comment in the front row.
My point was just about my experience. You can be hurt, and you can hurt the other person.
I guess my question, but I want to go here, but just to throw it up to think of, what does it look like to trust another, your word? What does it look like to be vulnerable to another, other words? I don't know if they're the same or different, but.
Well, you talk about your dad. When I was a little kid and I'd screw up, the thing that I heard from my dad over and over and over again was, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And that phrase has clicked in my mind over and over and over again. I mean, it was just the most freeing thing in the world. Because he'd say, well, and I'd come in all distressed and all worried about whatever I had done wrong. He said, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And then he said to play out that scenario. And his whole point was, you know, the sun's going to come up tomorrow. And life's going to go on and you're going to be just fine. And I guess if I get two things that I really want is, one is to not take life so seriously. Because I find out, as you talk to people on the age scale, that's one of the things they said, if I could do it over again, that's one of the things I do. And I think the other thing I would like is to live in a cooperative rather than a competitive society.
Amen. I see that in terms of power. Sorry, I see that in terms of vulnerability. I see that in terms of power. I mean, in terms of my own work or something, if we worked together, we'd be much stronger. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be that we were taking risks towards one another about our inside or something, but it's the... I got lost back at the generational question. I have a sense... I'm a teacher. The young guys, they're no threat. They're students. It's nothing. It's the old turkeys who still hide. They talk racist language, they talk sexist language. They play all these dumb games and you can't get anywhere. Well, we could put a show together and it wouldn't be vulnerability, it would just be efficiency, or things that aren't getting done would get done and we'd all have much more space and much more happiness. So I think I can talk that whole language without vulnerability, unless you move it out to the playing field metaphor in the state.
If we change the terms, I mean the label on what we're talking about, instead of vulnerability we call it openness, and instead of the feminine side of me we would call it the nurturing side, would it come out better?
The openness is very...
It may. What does it mean for a male to be nurturing? What does it mean for a male to be open? It would, yeah, just, okay, we have trust.
Yeah.
Okay. We're getting some good words out there. I still wonder what those words mean.
Yeah, the comment about, you know, the young students being open and the old ones playing games. We are all part of a changing society. We all change in our own selves. When I was a teenager, and subject to the draft, my worry was that I'd be killed before I found out what sex was about. You know, that doesn't worry me anymore.
That means you found out.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well, to answer that question, we have children from 13 to 38. As time progresses, though, you get into college or school or wherever, and your focus becomes on, you know, I've got this course of study that I'm going through. My near-term objective is to succeed in that small segment of my life, so that becomes the focus. As you get married and build a family, that focus changes to them. As you get older and you're looking towards retirement, again, your focus changes. And all the time society is changing. We're learning to relate to people in a different fashion. So I can't see us looking at the subject of wants, you know, what does man really want, and equate it to an absolute. I think it's a continuum.
There's kind of a, I don't know, remember the man's name, but he's kind of an Elizabeth Kubler-Ross person who's interviewed all these terminal patients, just thousands of them. And his comment was, he's never once interviewed somebody who was about to die who said, I wish I would have spent more time at the office. I wish I would have spent more time at the office. You know, when we get into valuing what we want and all that sort of stuff, when you, you know, there's a one wonderful thing we do at our university called the last lecture series. You know, if you were going to give one last lecture before you died, what would you say? Whatever, if you need those little gimmicks like that to get into this, what would you like to proclaim about who I am? This is what I stand for. This is how I lived, or this is how I related, or this is my being. What would we come up with?
Yeah. I think I always feel I want to earn my own self-respect. And I find that in my job or my relationship with my family, I never quite make it.
Oh, you do.
But did you hear him?
Yeah.
My own self-respect. You do. But you're not him.
That's right.
His own self-respect.
Yeah, but
how do we as males get our own self-respect?
But how can I help him?
There's not much time left, you say.
How can she help you?
Well, probably by saying that you made it. You really, the notches were there, you've told me about them lots of times, and recognize that you got there.
Well, don't I do that all?
I'm going to suggest that she cannot help him in that regard, nor in fact can anybody. That it's all yours.
Maturity means autonomy in that sense, back to Barry who went to the party.
Excuse me, but isn't a lot of this just a reflection of the individualistic kind of culture that we live in? I mean, can't we separate some of this out from what's really real? I mean, at least for me, what's really real? And I don't... I keep hearing, without trying to... like spiritualize any of this stuff, but I mean, I keep hearing a lot of the scripture coming back that instead of self-realization and self-actualization and all this, it's talking about self-denial and serving one another and preferring one another in love. And I mean, there's something that I think our culture, any culture maybe does, the world system, whatever that is, wherever you live, to people that we all grow up with false notions of what it means to be human. It just seems to me that it's not until we take the gospel seriously. It's such a radical thing. It's always got to be radical in terms of any culture. Begin to grapple with, you know, what in the world does it mean to deny myself and take up my cross? That just does not sound like the pop culture of the day, and yet there's something in me that says, that's where life really is for all of us, male or female.
Amen. But how inadequate do I feel? Because I'm not there.
I want
to be there. I can't be there. So who am I in this journey and in this struggle? If you want to feel inadequate, try that. I hear it. I want it. I want to say, this is who. That's who I am.
But as long as we keep, my sense is that as long as we keep talking about it in cultural terms, mm-hmm. like you know we've got to be autonomous, and we mm-hmm. then I'm feeling like that's again what the culture is saying to us. Yes, be strong individuals, male or female, compete and blabbity, blabbity, blab, but I don't think that's where life is. I just don't think that's where it is. And I don't understand. My grasp on this is real shaky. I don't understand for my own life what it means to deny myself and take up my cross. But I am convinced that that's where life is. And I need my Christian brothers and sisters to help me find out what that means and how to walk in that.
Does the male experience make that more difficult to embrace the we-ness? And I'm going to say more meaning than female, so now I'm breaking my own brain. I'm saying that may be different. Are we, as males, taught and therefore harder to we think we have to go it on our own? And then our gospel tells us that we don't have to. And so we get confused. Does that ring true then?
As we grow older, we start to sift that out and really see what is real and what is necessary and what's good for us. And I think that we should pass that on as grandparents, because we can do it.
But what do you
they
want
will
to pass
listen
on?
To it, the grandparents.
What do you want to pass on?
Well, I would like to pass on to my grandchildren what I feel about the world today and what should be in their lives, what should be important, and not the yuppie part of their lives. I would not like to see my grandchildren grow up to be yuppies. And I would not like to see my grandchildren grow up to shoulder a rifle or to participate in any war, because I feel there's no just wars. There's just causes, but no just wars. And I told my children that I would go to Canada and take my grandchildren because I feel that strong about it. But I would like to pass that along to them.
I hear that very strongly when you say this. And I'm a young man. I don't have any grandchildren. But in my image that I used initially about a playing field, I think that's in part what I'm looking for. Is for someone to tell me, in whatever specifics they choose to make it, how things should be. How you should play. I sort of hear that theme coming out in what you're saying you'd like to share with your grandchildren. And that's something which I think I haven't heard.
And you'd like to hear more of it?
Yes.
Well, I think we fail as grandparents. I really do. Because we think, well, now we're at the point of our lives that we should sit back and enjoy ourselves. I think we're at the point of our lives where we should concentrate on trying to put the values to our children and our grandchildren and what is really important. I know growing up and raising five children myself, I was so doggone busy trying to make that buck that I was a hawk when it come to Vietnam. And now I look back at myself and I'm ashamed to look in the mirror at the image that I received from that. But I feel that I know what is right now. And I would like to pass that on to my grandchildren.
I guess I agree with the gentleman over there in response to your question, and I don't really understand. I would say no to your question too. I don't see that as a problem. But I agree with this gentleman this time, saying I had the same concerns. I was fortunate one summer to have a chance to become National Endowment of the Humanities seminar at Yale University, and I stayed in the seminary buildings. And I went to the church there where Pelican, a number of fine theologians go to that church there. of university, and I attended Dr. Pelican, and we were having after the church conversation once, and he said, I really think it comes down to tradition. I think everything some way is related to tradition. I think that's what he's talking about. But to answer your question in regard to Christianity, I think that the whole Israelite, you know, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, and Moses, and on down to Christ, and Paul, and Luther, and...
Any women?
And we're all part of it. For me, it's a tradition which I want to pass on. For a real conservative, that's the key word, and it's accumulated wisdom of the past, and the highest of all wisdom for a Christian is that tradition.
What? Okay. See, okay.
I think each generation has to learn for itself. We can talk, but they're still going to learn by their own experience. And I think the message we have to give to our children, grandchildren, etc., is one of responsibility. You are responsible for your actions, whatever they may be. There's been a whole period of time where the individual has been taught, and I think this was generally during the 60s, you're not responsible for your actions, society is. You know, and that was a cop-out. If we teach them nothing else.
And also how we teach is children learn by example.
By our example, true. Yeah.
I would like to, because we probably have about 5-10 minutes max left, I would like to know from you how helpful this whole kind of process is. Not necessarily, I mean, helpful right here and now, the last two nights, but also, is this a type of conversation that should go on in churches with men's groups within your local church? Do you think it could go there or not? But, you know, so that's question two. Question one is, how has this, what we've been doing the last two nights, been helpful or not helpful to how you see yourselves or how you females see males?
I don't think it necessarily has to do with males. Maybe I don't feel that feminine, first of all, but I agree with him with the playing field. I don't know what basis to make any decisions on right now. I'm questioning everything. I have no... What are morals and ethics in this generation? Right. I don't know. And I don't see why you always have to break it into males and females, but I may be unique in that, or more unique than many other women.
I've heard lots of other people saying that they agree.
It's just people stuff. I mean, but it seems like we had to break it up into family, what people want in their families and what people want from society, or in general, ethics, you know, honesty, loyalty, and stuff like that. Maybe you have to break it down a little more than that instead of just talking about marriage and this and that.
Your question about whether or not this type of discussion should continue, could continue in our communities, our churches. We have represented here maybe 10% of the holding community or less. We have a very small segment that have had, you know, an evening of discussing the subject. In our congregation, we have koinonia groups, small 6 to 8 couples that meet together regularly. This type of a subject could be a very effective discussion in a small group because we have already spent time working together, developing trust and the ability to share with each other inner feelings. In the wider community, it might be suspect.
There's a question back there.
I feel that our searching here is virtuous and positive and all that stuff. But I also feel very frustrated because I feel we've got so many balls in the air that, you know, we're talking about tradition and maleness, vulnerability, and so many things that I feel frustrated about trying to get a direction here that I can really feel excited about. That's my feeling right now about our discussion.
Would you want to pick a direction if you could have?
Yeah, I would.
What direction?
Well, the direction that appeals to me is something like this. I think an important reason why the issue of maleness exists is because I think that males have tended to lose their grounding. And an important part of that is that so often when I get together with a bunch of fellas, an important part of the interchange is guys wanting to be show their mastery, confidence, sharpness on top of it, and all the BS. And how difficult it is to also show that we have inadequacies and that sort of thing. And our fears, and like has been addressed here on occasion, last night and tonight. And I think that if there was more awareness and willingness to look at that, that the issue of, the issue that you had on the board would be less of an issue.
Yeah, I think for those of us who have not participated verbally, I mean, it gives me many things to think about, and it's a beginning. So even though some of us haven't really said too much or anything, it's not that we're not with the group or understanding or caring to participate, but it's just that, you know, it's something that needs some thought.
Back here briefly and then up here.
Just in terms of format, I usually avoid these kind of sessions. I think most males I know do. I prefer like the Bible study this morning where it's a presentation and then open discussion with a clear focus, with clear text. And then the moderator controls it, so it's you leave with something a lot more focused.
I prefer that.
And I usually go ahead. And so if any church I went to sponsored something like this, I wouldn't go.
You
would go. Why did you come?
Yeah, related to that?
Yeah, I think I've learned something. I have to tell Gordon Wolf and then he's out of
Okay, we're going to apply here. We have some other questions here. We got about three more minutes of comments.
Two couple quick things to say. Tonight it's been real helpful for me to listen and just to listen. I have a good friend that's male that talks about his need to have a good male friendship, which he doesn't have. And listening to what's going on tonight helps me understand more what he's saying when he tells me that. The other thing that I think has been interesting is to listen to mostly males talk and talk about males and not be talking about things that are relating to humans and to females. It's been real nice and it's real comfortable to listen to that and not to feel offended by some of the statements that are being made.
How will Canada assess humans?
I understand that. I meant human as a group.
Yeah, we men are humans.
Is this day, Tom?
I'm afraid so, at least until about maybe 1 minute ago.
I think you should tell us at the beginning for sessions like this.
Okay.
What would you possibly do with this tape?
Okay, I don't know. It's up there for forums for people to listen to if they want. All tapes are, all forums are tape. However, if any of you would prefer them not to, all I have to do is walk in there and they erase it. You know, then it won't be for sale or listening library and all that sort of
nobody
stuff.
Will understand it.
Yeah. I think any other closing comment or statement anybody would like to make?
Answer your question. I think acceptance is the where it's at today. Power, sex, and money, after thinking about it, quiet it for a little bit, I think it all wraps up in that.
And I would say yes and no. I think when anything can be reduced to a bumper sticker, it is suspect. Suspect. Anything that can be reduced, males, females, it's too complex. And especially when we're talking about these sorts of things, we can say, yes, we need to work on acceptance. Acceptance has a lot to do with it. But it's always just that little bit more, too. So let's keep pushing a little bit more. Let's keep embracing a little bit more as well. Mm-hmm.